Surah and Daf Tes Zayin. So yesterday we discussed the sugya of Navi Sheker, and we came to the conclusion that to judge a Navi Sheker for Mises Chenek, we would need a bezdin of 71 elders, and we derived that from Dover Dover Gzeirah Shava from Zaki Mamre. And even though paradoxically Zaki Mamre doesn't require a bezdin of 23 judges, but nevertheless the word Dover in that context is referring to the 71 judges that he rebelled against. And the Dover in the case of the Navi Sheker is the 71 elders who will condemn him to death. So that was the discussion about the Navi Sheker. We're about to continue with the discussion about Kohen Gadol. But before we do that, I just have something here that I wanted to point out to you. If I find it, give me a second. Yeah, let's just see. Okay, that will get to, just one second. Yeah. So let's look at the next part of the Mishnah says, V'lo es kohen gadol. So if a kohen gadol is guilty of a capital crime, then instead of judging him in a beis din of 23 judges, we need a beis din of 71 elders. We not immediately. So let's see, we're on Daf Tes Zayin Amud Aleph, and we're about halfway through the Amud, the second of the wide lines. Omar Rabbi Abba, Omar Rav Adobar Ava, Omar the Omar Kro. So we're back to Yisro, and Yisro is giving his recommendation to Moshe Rabbeinu to set up a judiciary system, and he says, "Kol Adovra Gol Yoviu Elecha." Now, if you translate that literally, it doesn't have much of a punchline to it. It's just, you know, a great matter they should bring to you, and you might think you can come up with any number of interpretations as to what Yisro had in mind over here. Perhaps he meant if it's a very serious case, you know, $1 million lawsuit, then we should go to Moshe Rabbeinu. But according to Rav Ada, it's referring to Dvarav Shel Gadol, meaning the trial of an Adam Gadol, somebody who has Srara. Remember we spoke about the word Srara, about the concept of someone who has a position of authority, a status that he lords it over, he has some sort of control over others. And the Kohen Gadol is in charge of the other Kohanim to make sure that the Avoda is done properly, and only a Kohen who qualifies can be allowed to do the Avoda. All this is, and not only that, on Yom Kippur, for example, the Kohen Gadol is the one who carries the ball. I mean, every Avoda on Yom Kippur has to be done by the Kohen Gadol. So his special status allows him or makes him deserving of the description called Adam Gadol. He's an Adam Gadol, and a davar of an Adam Gadol, which means the trial of an Adam Gadol, requires Moshe Rabbeinu. Now Moshe Rabbeinu here is considered a substitute, sort of like a one man show. He encompasses within him 71 elders. He has the same exact status as a Sanhedrin Agdola. Now, what the Gemara is about to do is quote two brises. The first brise is going to contradict Rav Ada, and that's going to be a real problem. But the Gemara then comes up with a different brise that has a different opinion, which would support Rav Ada. And that's typical. The Gemara sometimes will ask a kash from one brisa, and then, although the Gemara admits that brisa is irreconcilable, but we have another brisa, and he holds like the other brisa. Meisve, we have another brisa, and the brisa again analyzes that very same pasuk that we saw quoted by Rav Ada, and it says Dover Gadol, or let's read the pasuk. It says Kol Adover Gadol Yaviu Elecha. What does that mean, Dover Gadol? So Rav Ada said that Dover Gadol means a Dover Shel Gadol, but this Bryce takes a different approach, that Dover HaGadol means Dover Kosher. And we're talking about the nature of the case that has to be brought in front of a Bezdin HaGadol, in this case in front of Moshe Rabbeinu, as he represents the Bezdin HaGadol. It's a very complicated case. And it's such that it really breaks new ground in law, in Jewish law. We don't have any precedent. We don't have any principle that would govern such a law. It's a Dover HaKosher. And the Braisa says, "Hata Omer Dover HaKosher." You interpret Dover HaGadol as Dover Kosher. Oh, Eino, maybe you want to refute me. You want to argue against me. Dvarav Shel Gadol. In other words, it's almost as if the Braisa anticipated Rav Ada. Rav Ada was historically later, but the argument of Rav Ada that Dover HaGadol means Dvarav Shel Gadol. It doesn't mean a Dover HaKosher. He says that's impossible. That's an untenable position. Why? Because two or three psukim later, in the same parak of Yudches, it says, "Shu omer quote es hadavra koshi yaviun el Moshe." So when it gets to the implementation of Yisro's recommendation, it says that they would bring a davra koshi to Moshe. So you see clearly that when Yisro advocated in favor of Dover HaGadol to bring to Moshe Rabbeinu, what he meant was the Dover HaKosher. Now, the Gemara is assuming that what they implemented is exactly what was recommended by Yisro. There was no deviation. And therefore, from the fact that it says it's a Dover HaKosher Yaviu Nel Moshe, Hare Dover HaKosher Omur. That when Yisro had said Dover HaGadol Yaviu Nel Moshe, what he meant was the Dover HaKosher. Again, there are two questions that I have to ask here on this Braisa. One question is, the Braisa now doesn't have a source for the requirement of a Bezdin HaGadol in the case of a Kohen Gadol. Because Rav Ada pointed out that this Dover HaGadol, which means Dvar Shel Gadol, Yavino Elecha means to bring to Moshe Rabbeinu, who represents the Sanhedrin Gadol of 71, is a reference to the Gadol, the Kohen Gadol. That now the Braisa says no, Dover HaGadol is reference to the type of case it is and the difficulty and complexity of the question that comes in front of this Bezdin that has to be brought in front of the highest court, and that's called Dover HaKosher. So we don't have a pasuk Dover HaGadol then, because Dover HaGadol is interpreting as Dover HaKosher. We have no source now for the halacha that Kohen Gadol is only judged in a court of 71. There's no source for that. That's question number one. Question number two is, it's very odd. Yisro says Dover HaGadol, and then when they implement his plan, his recommendation, it says Dover HaKosher. Why use two different lashonos? Again, you know, when the Torah is written, the Torah has to be written in a clear form. If the Torah uses two different words and two different languages, it indicates that two different things, they have two different meanings. So it's very odd. Yisro advocates Dover HaGadol Yaviu Nel Lecha. And then three psukim later, when Klal Yisrael implement Yisro's recommendation, it says Dover HaKosher Yaviu Nel Lecha. Do you follow my... Does anybody empathize with me here? I'm looking for empathy. It's very strange. You start with Dover HaGadol, and then you end up with Dover HaKosher. I once saw, you know, the Chasam Sofer, who was a brilliant genius about 150 years ago. I was recently at his kever. He wrote a commentary on the Chumash. So on the Chumash, he really asks this question. He doesn't ask the question on the Braisa, but he asks the question on the Chumash itself. Why does it say, Kol Adora Gadol Yavino Lechen, and then it says, Adora Koshi Yavino Moshe? So he says it's a difference between a non-Jewish mentality and a Jewish mentality. That's what he claims. He says when Yisro, who hadn't yet converted, when he gave his recommendation, he meant to Dover HaGadol. It's got to be a $1 million lawsuit. But the Jewish approach to law and to judgment is not that way. Din pruta kedin meah. It doesn't matter. Even one pruta could be taken to the highest court of Israel. So therefore, It's not that we need Moshe Rabbeinu for a $1 million lawsuit. The amount of money that's involved in the law case is irrelevant. What's relevant is Darak Kosha. If it's a really difficult halachic shaila and we need the genius of Moshe Rabbeinu, who is the Moser Torah, then we'll take it up to Moshe Rabbeinu. Okay, it's a beautiful foreign. I don't know if you followed me, but that's some sofa. But that doesn't answer my question. The Brisa is telling me that, what does Darak Gadol mean? Does it mean the way Rav Adam meant, that it's Dvarim Shel Gadol, and referring to a Kohen Gadol as judge? Or does it mean a Dvarim Kasha? So I'll prove to you, says the Braisa, that Dvarim Gadol means Dvarim Kasha. It doesn't mean Dvarim Shel Gadol. Why? Because when the Bnei Yisrael implemented the Yisrael's recommendation, it says, Dvarim Kasha Yavin Al Moshe. But again, that begs the question. You're telling me that the Dvarim Kasha is going to reveal to me what Dvarim Gadol means. So why did the Torah confuse us by using two different lashonot? You pasach b'dovar gadol, v'siyim b'dovar kasha. I mean, in any event, now we're up to Rav Ada. We have to defend Rav Ada because there's a brisa that explicitly rejects Rav Ada. So the more answers, don't get nervous about that. Hu diomer ki haitana, because there's another brisa, and Rav Ada is waving the flag of the other brisa. What does it say in the other braisa? Dvar gadol, dvar shel gadol. It means that we're judging a person who has sraga, right? He has a certain position of status, and he has to be judged in front of somebody like Moshe Rabbeinu, whose shakul has the same weight as 71 judges. Ata Omer, if you'll tell me, well, it doesn't have to be dvar shel gadol. Oh, perhaps it could be eino ela dvar kasha. Kshu Omer said, "Dovra Kasha Yavir El Moshe." Harei Dovra Kasha Omer. Hamani Mekayim Dovra Gadol Dvarim Shel Gadol. In other words, the Brisa says, "Why did the Torah use two different lashonos? It opened up with Dovra Gadol, then it ends up with Dovra Kasha." The answer is because Dovra Gadol is not to be interpreted as Dovra Kasha. So the very point that we made is really the cornerstone of this Brisa. The Brisa is starting with the assumption that it cannot be that Dovra Gadol means Dovra Kasha, because Dovra Kasha is mentioned in a different pasuk later on when Bnei Yisrael implemented the plan of Yisro. Obviously, when Yisro said Dovra Gadol Yavin Al Moshe, he didn't mean a Dovra Kasha. They're two different things. So what is Dovra Gadol? It must be Dvarim Shel Gadol, which means that a Kohen Gadol has to be judged in front of 71 judges. But now the Gemara turns around and says, what about the first Braisa? V'hai Tana, what about the first Braisa? Why does it say Dovra Gadol and then it says Dovra Kasha? Trei Kroi Lamali. Why two different Lashonos and two different Pesukim? So the Gemara answers, Chad L'Tzavah B'Alma V'Chad L'Asiyah. One is the Tzavah, meaning the Tzivuri. Tzivuri means the command. This was the recommendation of Yisro. And that's Dovra Gadol. And then when it comes to the Asiyah means the implementation, then it says Dovra Kasha. But again, the Gemara is totally ignores the difference of the nuances in these meanings here. Basically, according to this Brisa, the first Brisa, it's the same. There's no difference between Dovra Gadol and Dovra Kasha. But why did the Torah use two different lashonos to indicate that not only did Yisro advocate in favor of a Dovra Kasha that should be brought in front of Moshe Rabbeinu, but Bnei Yisrael embraced his advocacy, his recommendation, and they implemented it. He says in the footnote, the Torah went out of its way to point out that they did exactly what Yisro told them to do, and the Torah went out of its way to use a second lashon in order to indicate that next level. And then the Gemara says, Chad L'Tzavah B'Alma V'Chad V'Idach. What about the second Braisa? How does he know that there was both a Tzivui and an implementation of the Tzivui? Because according to the second Braisa, there are two different meanings here. Dovra Gadol means a Kohen Gadol has to be judged in front of 71. And Dovra Kasha means something that's complex and halakhically challenging has to be brought to Moshe Rabbeinu. See, V'Idach, the other Braisa says the following. If you're telling me that the repetition is justified by implementation, meaning chad l'tzavah, chad l'asiyah, im kein, then the Torah says lichtov o gadol gadol o kasha kasha. If we are implementing Yisro's recommendation that we should be described as doing exactly what Yisro told us. So either Yisro should have said Davar Kosh and then we implemented the Asiyah of Davar Kosh, or he should have said Davar Gadol and then we should have implemented the Davar Gadol. What's going on over here? Why are the two different Lashonas? My Gadol and my Kosher? Shma Mino Tarti. The reason why the Torah changes its language is to tell us two things. Yeah, we killed two birds with one stone. On the one hand, it's going to teach me that we implemented exactly what Yisro recommended. But on the other hand, the different Lashonos are going to teach me that we're talking about two different concepts. One concept is Dvarav Shel Gadol, and the other concept is Dvarav HaKoshim. And that's the end of this sugya. Okay, now in the Sefer Gvuras Yitzchak, he quotes the Brisker Rav. Let's see if we can make any sense out of it. Now, we've been talking about Dvarav Shel Gadol in terms of a Kohen Gadol that was condemned to death, and he has to be judged in front of a court of 71 elders. So the first point I want to make to you is that the Braisa, you know, in the back of your Gemaras, you'll have what's called Tosefta, and the Braisa says that Ein Ma'amidim Kohen Gadol El Bebezdin Shel Shim V'Yechad. We're talking now about a choice and an appointment of the Kohen Gadol. Till now we've been talking about a judgment of the Kohen Gadol. But the Braisa is going back to the original appointment of the Kohen Gadol. And the Rambam codifies this in the fifth parak of Hilchos Sanhedrin. He writes, Ein ma'midim melech, we don't appoint a king, ela bebezdin shel ayin aleph, the ein ma'midim Kohen Gadol, ela bebezdin shel ayin aleph. So it means that the Rambam codifies this braisa, and the requirement of 71 judges regarding a Kohen Gadol applies even to the appointment of the Kohen Gadol. He can only be appointed by Shivim V'Echad. So he says the following in the name of the Brisker Rav. He says, the concept of Bezdin makes sense when you're talking about a judgment. So if this Kohen Gadol, who was long ago appointed, is suspect of being guilty of a crime, then you need to judge him in a Bezdin. But where do we know, from how do we derive this halacha that Hamadas Kohen Gadol, that when you appoint the Kohen Gadol, you need a Bezdin? He says, logically, Hamadas Kohen Gadol lo tzarech bezdin klal. And he says the following. There's a fundamental difference between melech and Kohen Gadol. If you're appointing a king, the king rules over all of Israel. Anything that's relevant to all of Israel requires a bezdin of ayin aleph. So I understand, I can justify that when you appoint a king, it has to be appointed by some body that represents all of Klal Yisrael. You follow what's going on? Like, for example, okay, this is not true in American government. I don't know, I'm not sure if I have a good model for this in contemporary life, but imagine the following. In America, we vote for the president. But let's say, again, theoretically, you don't vote for the president. What do? You vote for the representatives, and then they in turn, because the people invest their power in them, and they represent the people, they will determine who is the monarch or who is the president over the entire country. Again, that's not the American model. Is there a model?
No, in a way you do have it. They have the Electoral College.
The Supreme Court.
Oh, the Electoral College would decide who's president?
Yes, yeah.
Ah, okay,
cause
good.
This gives equal rights to the states.
Right, but it's very complicated in federalism. But what I'm just saying is that the Brisker Rav, again, he doesn't quote politics here, but I was just giving a mushel.
Okay.
He's saying the following, that which body of legislators represent the people of Israel, the Gansa people, the whole people, that's called the Bezna Gadol. They are the final authority. They will now approve the appointment of a king, because the king now lords it over the entire nation. And again, he has very extensive powers, the king. So that makes sense. But he says in the case of a Kohen Gadol, who says that we need the representatives of all the people of Israel, maybe you should have an electoral Kohenic college, you know, that maybe the Kohenim should get together and make a college, and they will represent all the Kohenim, and they should appoint them, the you know, the Kohen Gadol.
Doesn't the Kohen Gadol represent, not represent, but have
achrayus
over
the
place?
Or? Maybe that's the answer to the Brisker Rav's question. Achrayus, yes, but I wouldn't say political sovereignty, if you follow what I mean. I don't think that, you know, I may have to respect the Kohen Gadol, you know, that's a mitzvah of Kedushas Kohuna V'Kidashto, but I don't think the Kohen Gadol could in any way control my life, if you find me. The Melech could control my life. In fact, the Melech could script me to the army, and I have to put my life on the line, and if I rebel, that's bad. Not only that, he can confiscate my property. Did you know that? You know, the Kohen Gadol, with all due respect, he can't confiscate my property. He can't conscript me to the army. So you're right. There is an element of representation. You know, he goes up to the Beis HaMikdash, and especially on Yom Kippur, you know, he's going to bring the Kapara for us. But that's only a reflection of his Kedusha. That's not really representative of, you know, of his sovereign control or his domination over the people. Yeah, Don?
No, I was going to say that. No.
In any event, he quotes the... Kiryas Sefer. Kiryas Sefer, I forgot his name right now, but he was one of the commentaries on the Rambam. And he writes, Ein ma'amidim kohen gadol, ela bebezdin shel ayin aleph. But he quotes a source for this. We didn't have any source for this until now. Mishum dechsiv, kol adavra gadol yavino lecha. That's our sugya, our pasuk. Dvar shel gadol, kigon, nasi v'kohen gadol. And yavina lecha, says the Kiryas Sefer, Moshe b'makom ayin aleph kohen. So you see clearly that the Kiryas Sefer understood that just like the appointment of a king requires the Bezna Gadol, so to the requirement, the appointment of a Kohen Gadol requires the Bezna Gadol, and that's included under the law of Kol Dovra Gadol Yavino Lecha. So it's really interesting. Our Mishnah that says, Ein Ma'amidim Melech V'Kohen Gadol El V'Bezna Shalayin Aleph, our Mishnah doesn't say anything about Ma'amidim Kohen Gadol V'Bezna Shalayin. Let's go back to the Mishnah. Does it say anything about appointing a king in our Mishnah? I don't think so, but maybe I missed it. Let me go back to the Mishnah. Can you help me out here, Rav Osai? Let's go back to the Mishnah. It says, Ein Donim Lois HaShevet Lois Novi Shekel Lois Kohen Gadol Al Pi Bezin Shel Shem V'Yechon. So far I don't see anything about appointing a Kohen Gadol. Just one second. Did I miss it somewhere? Is it here? Oh, if art school makes reference to it, then I have to, you know, if it's either Steinsaltz or art school, then I'm out of here. I don't know. Yeah, what does art school say? Yeah, what does he say?
No, I just looked at it. It just said there was a little blurb.
Yeah, he says something about appointing
a Kohen Gadol. It says imprints. I don't know where they got it from. I don't know.
No, but what is he referring to when you say Kohen? Is he talking about judging a Kohen Gadol, or is he talking about appointing a Kohen Gadol?
He's talking about 71.
No. Again, Chanov, I'm not that stupid. I know that to judge a Kohen Gadol, I need a Bezdin of 71. But I'm asking, does he say anything about appointing a Kohen Gadol? If he says something, I'll be very impressed because he knew the Brisker Rav. That's impressive. But again, I just want to go back to the Mishnah. 1 minute. Does the Mishnah say? Does the Mishnah say anything about appointing a Kohen Gadol. Let's just go over the Mishnah. I mean, I'm not going to read over the whole Mishnah here, but okay. So it says, "Ain Donim." So this is going to go over the Mishnah. I don't know. I don't see it. I don't see it. Maybe I'm missing it. I don't see it. So again, you know, it's a little bit of a pella that the Mishnah doesn't mention the requirement of Shiva V'Yechad as far as appointing a king, as far as appointing a Kohen Gadol. The Rambam in Hilchos Sanhedrin, the Rambam in Hilchos Sanhedrin says what? The Rambam actually omits this halach of Ein Ma'midin Kohen Gadol El Bebezin Shel Ayin Aleph. So Rabosai, let's just summarize. The Tosefta here in Sanhedrin tells us Ein Ma'midin Kohen Gadol El Bebezin Shel Ayin Aleph. The Rambam only has Ein Ma'midin Melech El Bebezin Shel Ayin Aleph. The Rambam doesn't mention a word about appointing a Kohen Gadol. And the Kiryas Sefer says that the Tosefta, which says that you don't appoint a Kohen Gadol without the High Court of Israel, is based on Kol Davar Gadol Yavin Elecha. But we say that Davar Gadol Yavin Elecha means that we require Beis Din, and in this case, the highest court of the land, in order to judge the Kohen Gadol for an accused crime. It doesn't say anything about appointing a Kohen Gadol. So that's a question. I don't know. The Rambam doesn't have it. So if somebody would quiz you and ask you, well, with regard to Kohen Gadol, to what extent do we need a Beis Din of Ayin Aleph? So you wrote the answer was in order to condemn him for a crime, and somebody else wrote in order to appoint the Kohen Gadol as the Kohen Gadol. You'd both be right. Except that the Rambam only quotes the halacha of judging a Kohen Gadol. He doesn't mention anything about appointing a Kohen Gadol, but nevertheless there is a Tosefta that says it explicitly. And not only that, the Kiryas Sefer explains that it's derived from this pasuk Dvar Gadol. Dvarav Shel Gadol. And Dvarav Shel Gadol includes even appointing the Gadol, in this case appointing the Baal Sarara, meaning the Kohen Gadol. Now, I just want to add something else from the Brisker Rav. He says the following. Initially, the Pasuk says, Davrak Gadol Yavin El Lech. Then, it says, Davrak HaKosha Yavin El Moshe. In Parshas Dvarim, Hashem repeats the episode of Yisro a second time around. And there it says, "Hadavar asher yikshe mimchem takriven elai ushmativ." So in Sefer Dvarim, as opposed to Sefer Shmos, it only mentions "Hadavar asher yikshe mimchem," something that's very difficult for you to answer. You bring to Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu is actually talking in first person. He says, "Hadavar asher yikshe mimchem takriven elai ushmativ." He says the following: Hasenedros ha'elu hayu beis din shel chaf gimel Moshe hayu bimkom beis din shel ayin aleph. So again, the regular Sanhedrin was made up of 23 judges. Moshe Rabbeinu had a high-powered status of 71 judges, and that's called Moshe bimkom shivim v'yechad. The Gemara assumes that here now. Sugya, the Gemara is going to be even more explicit as we go along. V'hine, yesh shnei ofanim shetzrichim dafka bezin shel ayin aleph. Chada, d'yesh dvarim shehen mitzad atzman tzrichim dafka bezin shel ayin aleph. Kirisnan ein donin lo es ha-shevet ve lo es ha-novi sheker ve lo es ha-kohen godol el al pi bezin shel ayin aleph. Ein osin ir anidachas el al pi bezin shel ayin aleph. V'chule. So the etzem ha'asiya, in other words, implementing some sort of halachic effectuating some sort of halachic change of status, requires Beis Din. The Ode, he says, so all that is called the Dovra Golo. The Ode, he says, Yesh Ofan Sheni, there's another category of cases, Shetzrichim Dafka Beis Din Shel Ayin Aleph. Kigon im nolad safek o machlokes bidin min adinin. When we have a halachic issue, a complexity, and we don't know how to determine it, oz hachra tzliy rak bidei beis din hagadol. So the final authority to interpret the law and to resolve all questions in law is vested in the power of the high court. Kemo shiksiv, just like the pasuk says, ki polei davar mimchal mishpat. Yipole means it's beyond your grasp. The kamtov alisa lamakom, and then you go up to the lishkas hagazis outside the Beis Hamikdash in Yerushalayim, and that's where the final decision is going to be made by the Beis Nagol that sat in the lishkas hagazis. He says, in fact, the Rambam splits between these two categories. Whenever you require Sanhedrin in order to effectuate some sort of change or to condemn someone and so forth and so on, that's brought by the Rambam Hilchos Sanhedrin. But with regard to deciding the final law in a case of a doubt, that's brought by the Rambam in Hilchos Mamrin. The latter case of something that's so uncertain in the law itself and needs interpretation, that's called the Dovra Kosha. Whereas something which is so important that it's a major decision, and in order to effectuate that change, you need the Beis Hagadol, that's called the Dovar Hagadol. So, in other words, we're talking about two different concepts. One, and both of them require Beis Hagadol, both of them indicate the power and the authority of Beis Hagadol. One is called Dovar Hagadol. And that's referring to all these things that are so stupendous in their significance. You know, something like Irani Dachas, to put to death a city, or, for example, a Shevet that worshipped Avodah Zarah. Then we have the case of a Navi and a Kohen Gadol. These are so significant that it's called a Dovra Gadol. Now we have a different concept, that if there's any uncertainty in the law itself, and we need a Hakra, then we go to a Beis Nagol, but that's called a Dovar Hakosha. Are you following?
Yeah.
So whereas the Chassam Sofer gave this whole vitz, you know, this whole interpretation that Dovar Hagadol was in the words, the mouth of Yisrael, and Dovar Hakosha is in Klal Yisrael. No. The Brisker Rav is going on a whole different venue, whole different approach. In his approach, Dovra Gadol and Dovra Kasha, they represent two different functions or two different authorities of the Beis Nagadol. Now he says something fascinating here. In the case of a Dovra Kasha, which is a complex issue that's uncertain in the law, there's a particular Beis Din that brings that question, that raises that question, and is unable to resolve, and sends that question over to the Beis Din HaGadol in Yerushalayim. Beis Din HaGadol will tell that lower court what the law is, but the final psak, the final what's called Gemar Din, is going to be issued in the lower court. Not so in the Dovra Gadol. Dovra Gadol means the Gemar Din has to be issued by the Beis Din HaGadol. So let's say, for example, there was an issue about a Kohen Gadol that was accused of a crime in a certain city. Let's say in Lud, they took it in front of the Beis Din. The Beis Din says we can't deal with this case. They send the case to the Beis Din HaGadol. In that situation, Dovra Gadol, Beis Din HaGadol is going to issue the Gemar Din. Now we have another situation. We don't know what's the difference between a Nida and a Zava. You know, what are the halachic rules or principles? So the lower court sends that to the highest court. The highest court makes the determination, and then it sends it back to the lower court, and the lower court is going to issue the final verdict. They were the ones who raised the question. It was relevant in their court, in their locale, and they will give the final answer. They will only get that answer, but as it's transmitted to them from the Beis Nagadol. And imagine if one of the members of the Beis Nagadol goes back to the lower courts, and he's the dissenting view, and he tells in the lower courts that we should do X, which is against the decision of the Beis Nagadol. What's that called? Sakimamri. That's Sakimamri. Then he's put to death. Why? Because he went back to the lower courts. The lower courts have to follow the decision of the higher courts.
Does that mean that that decision enunciated by the lower court only applies to that locale, even though it went to a higher court?
I don't think so. I hear your question. It's an excellent question. You hear what Jerry's asking. In other words, if Beis Nagadol is sending that verdict back to a lower court. I think there are two aspects here. You know, one is clarifying the law itself, and one is issuing a Gemara Din in a particular circumstance, particular scenario. So when we send it back to the lower courts, that has nothing to do with interpreting the law. The final interpretation of the law is issued by this gathering assembly of 71 elders. But in that particular case, that's where the Beis Din has to implement that decision. And the Brisker Rav wants to explain that in Sefer Dvarim, it says, "Hadara shayiksha mimchem takrivu elai." Right, so mimchem, dara shayiksha mimchem means in a lower court, takrivu elai. And Moshe Rabbeinu says, "You'll bring it to me because I represent the high court." And now, if you look through our Mishnah, you will only find Beis Nagadol mentioned in our Mishnah for a dara gadol. There's no mention of Dovra Kosha in our Mishnah. Meaning our Mishnah doesn't answer the question, what is the authority of Beis Nagadol? It only tells you what is the authority of Beis Nagadol as far as a Dovra Gadol is concerned. Dvarav Shel Gadol, the Dvarav Shel Shevet, Shel Navi, and Kohen Gadol, and so forth. But if you ask me what is the most important function of Beis Nagadol, it's not to put a Navi Sheker to death. I mean, that's important if you have to do it, but what's more important is that this is the final authority to determine the halacha. And if anyone disagrees with them, he's a zakei mamre, and he'll be put to death. And that's not mentioned in our Mishnah, because our Mishnah is focused entirely, exclusively on Dovra Gadol. What are the cases that have to be determined by the very nature of the case, and the change that's going to be impacted, like for example the chiyuv on the shevet or on the Navi and so on. That requires the Dovra Gadol, that requires a Beis Nagadol. But if you ask the theoretical question, not in terms of Beis Din, but in terms of the ultimate power and authority of this body of 71 elders, that's written in a different parasha, and that's the parasha of Hakras Sveikos. That's the Dovra Kosha. I have only one objection here. I think the Brisker Rav is beautiful. I just don't understand one thing according to the Brisker Rav. Why is it that in Parashas Yisro, it mentions Dovra Gadol, right? That's what Yisro said. And then when it gets to the Asiya, the implementation, it says Dovra Kosha. If the Brisker Rav is right that Dovra Gadol refers to one particular aspect of the authority of Beis Nagadol and Dovra Kosha to another, then why is it that in the same breath, when it comes to Tzava and then finally Asiya, the Torah uses two different words? I'm inclined to think, again, this is very iffy, that according to the Brisker Rav, Yisro had one thing in mind, but the Torah and Moshe Rabbeinu broadened what Yisro said. Now, Yisro's presentation and his recommendation was very narrow, and it was very restricted. And he said that there's something called Dovra Shel Gadol, Dovra Shel Gadol, meaning that there's certain people who have Srora, and when we judge them, we have to judge them in the highest court. And that should be taken to you, Moshe Rabbeinu, as representative of the highest court. But in fact, Klal Yisrael, under the guidance of Moshe Rabbeinu, implemented a much broader definition and status to the authority of the Beis Nagadol, and it became a Dovra Kosha, which includes the final decision. You see, I would have been happy if the concept of Dovra Kosha would only appear in Sefer Dvarim or in the Parsha of Ki Yipoleh Mincha Dovar, Bein Dam L'Dam, Bein Din L'Din, Bein Mishpah L'Mishpah, and then Mekam Tov Alisa, there it should be talking about Dovra Kosha. But when we get to Yisro, Yisro is only talking and advocating for a Dover Gadol, but now we're somehow expanding it to include any suffix, any doubt about the law itself, and that's called the Dover HaKosh. Okay, that gives us a little bit more teeth. Alright, now we get to a very interesting piece of Gemara. It's a very short piece, but it's very, very intriguing. The Gemara says, "Boy, Rabbi Elazar." By the way, I just want to point out, tomorrow is my last in a series of Wednesdays, so I have to start tomorrow early at 8 o'clock. If you can make it, great. "Boy, Rabbi Elazar, Shoro shall kohen gadol bekama." Wow, this is really interesting. We said until now that when a shor has to be put to death, how many judges do we need to sit on the 23? But what happens if this happens to be the shor that's owned by the kohen gadol? Now we have a principle that we kill the shor in front of the same bezdin. I don't mean literally the same bezdin, but the makeup of the bezdin, the status, has to be identical to that of Mises HaBailim had the human being been guilty of this crime. And that's based on the pasuk, "Hashor Yisakel v'gam ba'ol of Yumas." Well, the gam ba'ol of Yumas in this case of the kohen gadol is not 23 judges. We've already established that. How many judges do you need in order to put a kohen gadol? You need 71. So, what do we do with the shor of the kohen gadol? So the Gemara analyzes it. "Lemisas bailim didei midaminin le." Shall we take this shor? And when we determine how many judges have to adjudicate the case, we should compare it to the bailim, to the owner of this shor, didei of this shor. Didei means of this shor. Who's the bailim of this shor? He's the kohen gadol, and his misa would be in front of a court of 71 judges. "Oh Dilma, lemisas bailim di alma midaminin le." Shall we equate this shor with the general law of shvarim, of all aksim, and that means all you need is a basin of 23. In other words, are we taking the analogy, the equation between misas shor and misas bailim in a more generic sense, in a conceptual world, and we're saying that the shor has to be put to death in the way we would condemn to death a human being, which means 23 judges? Or do we apply this principle of misas shor k'misas bailim in its very limited, restricted, specific context? And if it's owned by someone who can only be put to death by a bezdin of 71, then his shor would only be able to be put to death in a bezdin of 71. Now, I just want to point out that what I'm perplexed about is that if you assume, like the second side, that the Mises HaBailim, I'm sorry, the Mises HaShar should be equal to the Mises HaBailim, meaning of that Bailim, and that actually that was the first time, sorry, I said second time. Right, can Mises HaBailim didei midaminin le, didei means of this Bailim, then what's going to be the deal in a Shar Shal Hefker that kills a human being? A Shar that's ownerless. Well, for that matter, a shor that's owned by a guy. Now, the law of Ben Noach is that Ben Noach is put to death by a court that's made up of how many judges? Anybody know? One judge. So, if we look at shor di alma, then the Mises HaShor would be 23. And in this case of shor shel Ben Noach, it would be, if we apply it to Bailim Didei, then it would be one judge. So we could put the shor to death with one judge. But life gets even more complicated, because let's say the shor is hefker. So to whom do I compare the shor? Right? There's a shor running around the streets, nobody owns the shor, and it kills a human being.
Kill immediately.
I got three choices. You decide. Should we put the shor to death in the basin of one judge, in a bezdin of 23 judges, or in a bezdin of 71 judges? And it depends. If the shor was owned by a guy, I'll put it to death in one. If it's owned by a Jew, I'll put it to death 23. But if it's owned by a kohen gadol, I'm going to put it to death in a bezdin of 71. Well, who owns the shor? Nobody owns the shor.
I thought in that case you can just kill it immediately. But didn't we learn that? Or am I wrong?
No. Any other animal, but not a shor.
Ah.
Right, the Torah is very compassionate about a shor. That itself, what I just said, is a machlokas tanoim between Chachom and Rabbi Eliezer. According to Rabbi Eliezer, a shor has a built-in protection. Even if it kills a human being, we got to take it to Beis Din. Any other animal that kills a human being, just kill it on the spot and call it Kodem L'Hargo Zocha. Then we have the Chachamim. The Chachamim say that shor is representative of any animal. So any animal that kills a human being has to be taken to a Beis Din. So here's my question. If the shor is ownerless, what Beis Din will judge and condemn the shor for death? If you hold kivisas bialim. See, if you hold kivisas bialim di alma, right, what's the language of the Gemara? Yeah, kivisas bialim di alma, then I could say that, let's look at the rov. You know, most cases we're talking about a shor that requires a Beis Din of 23. But if we're talking about misas bialim di day, then it becomes more complicated. So, Blineta, I want to cover that in my 10:30 shiur. That was just a plug for my 10:30 shiur. So that's the Rabban. The Rabban says that the shor has to be put to death for two reasons. Not just because it's a dangerous animal, but also the shor has to be punished. Now that's a pell of a Rabban, you know, that we punish an animal for its crime. You know, how do you understand that? I mean, an animal doesn't have free choice. But apparently, you know, there are certain instincts in an animal. I mean, the Gemara says about the mob, what?
If he's a mu'ud.
Yeah, that's another issue. Okay, we have to figure out how he's a mu'ud. But the Gemara says about the mavel that the animals, the Torah says, ki yishchis kol basar star kol aris. Kol basar refers even to the animals. And the animals have to die at the time of the flood, except for a few super duper pious animals. So I don't know, that's a different question. How do you view an animal? Well, what is the Torah's hashkaf on animals? Are there any vegetarians here in the audience? No? Alright, that's good. I like meat. In the Persan family, it's all about meat. You know, that's it. Wherever we go, there's another barbecue. Is it? But seriously, it's vegetarianism is not, you know, it's not far from a Torah hashkafa. I don't think it's foreign. I mean,
my son was.
He's vegetarian.
Oh yeah.
And now they go even beyond. I mean, they have vegans, yeah. Fish. I've got so many different madrigas in vegetarianism, but. Rav Kook himself, the first chief rabbi of Palestine, was a vegetarian. I mean, the idea of vegetarianism is that really in the original design of God, animals were not meant to be killed. It's only when Noah comes out of the Teva that Hashem allows man to eat animals. You know, in the original plan of creation, man was only allowed to eat vegetables and fruits.
If there was nothing else at that point, right?
No, there were animals who were created on the fifth day of creation, but we couldn't kill them.
No, no.
In fact, it's a machlokus if an animal dies, whether you're allowed to eat its meat before Noah.
Well, no, when Noah came out of the ark.
That's when the Torah allowed you to kill animals.
No, I'm saying, because there was nothing else at that point. The earth had been...
Ah, okay, that's another pshat, but you have to go through the sugya. It's here, it's Masechet Sanhedrin, but I don't know if we'll get to it in the near future. Okay. But the Gemara wants to know, did Noah get a specific license to allow him to kill an animal in order to feed himself? And the Gemara is talking halachic, so you're asking what else was there around? I don't know, you have to figure that out. I don't know, did Noah take any... take any plants into the teva? I don't know. You know, you could take an otzis shein or naku. But anyway, the point is that the Torah's hashkaf on animals is not an easy matter. An animal does seem to be, at least according to Ramban, to some extent, it's a little bit of a. And they talk about. Moshe Rabbeinu, that why was Moshe chosen by Hashem? You know, some say that it was because of his compassion on animals. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
And it's unbelievable how many of our greats were all roim. They were all very compassionate shepherds. I mean, the goyim took a lot from us, you know, but in the original, I mean, I hate to use the word shepherds because it sounds like I'm talking Christianity, but the concept of shepherds was not invented by the Christians, you know. Om Rabbi, Midakomi Boile Shoro, for the fact that Rabbi Elazar was worried, he was confused about Shor, Michal de Mamono Pshitale. Why don't you ask a more basic question? What about any sort of monetary dispute between so and so and the Kohen Gadol? Maybe, to the same extent that the Torah says that to judge a Kohen Gadol for an accused crime, you need a Beis Din of Ayin Aleph. Maybe if you accuse, you know, the Kohen Gadol of not paying back his debts, maybe there also we should require a Beis Din of 71. So the Gemara says, Pshita. He says, the Gemara says the following, that you're right. Rabbi Elazar never raised the question of Dini Mominos of a Kohen Gadol. You know, money that's in the possession of a Kohen Gadol. Mal detema hol v'kos of kol hadora gadol, kol dvarv shel gadol. So the Gemara now says the following, that you know what, maybe Rabbi Elazar could have expanded his investigation, his question, to include even Dini Mominos. The reason he didn't do so is because he thought that our Mishnah, since it's speaking about condemning the Kohen Gadol to death for a capital crime, therefore it's limited to that case of Dini Nefashos. But Ein Hachinami, the Torah says, kol hadavar agadol yovina lecha. As I state, that's what it says in the Pasuk. So why the extra word kol? So it seems to say that any aspect of Kohen Gadol, any din that's relevant to the Kohen Gadol, he's one of the claimants, requires the person of 71. That's included on the Kol Dover. Kamash Malon. So now, Abai tells us that the din is not like that. You don't need a person of Shiva V'Echad. And in that sense, what we're doing is, we are limiting the words Dover Gadol and the interpretation of Dover Gadol to the case of a Kohen Gadol Chayav Misa. So it sounds like the final answer or the final decision of this Gemara is that only in a case where the Kohen Gadol is Chayav Misa, then we need to judge him in front of a Beis Din of 71. But other aspects of the Kohen Gadol, for example, if he has a dispute over money, or if his shar, for example, kills a person, that's not included on the Dover HaGadol. Dover HaGadol means Misa, Achiv Misa. Yeah, but the Gemara doesn't answer the question why it says Kol Dover HaGadol. Well, what's the rebuy of the word Kol? I don't know, I don't have an answer to that question. Let me just see, he quotes here in the footnote. He says, what happens if a Kohen Gadol is not Chayav Misa, but he violated a lower crime, a Lo Saseh, and he gets Malkus? Now, Malkus, we have decided, I mean, that was a slight issue, but the final halacha as far as Malkus is concerned, that all we need is a Beis Din Shel Shlosha. And the Gemara later on is going to say that applies even to a Kohen Gadol. That we're not going to say that Dover HaGadol Yavinei Lecha refers to Achiv Malkus. No, it only refers to Achiv Misa. So the Gemara is going to ask later on, Ema Hachinami. In other words, maybe Kol Dvarav Shel Kohen Gadol should be judged. Just one second. Ema Hachinami. Okay, Kol Dvarav. All right, that's already the sugya later on. So let's just make our skola on the next sugya. The next sugya is a major, major sugya. We'll go back to the Mishnah. And the Mishnah again is deciding when we need a Bezna Gadol, and the Mishnah says that, second, Ein Motzien Lemelchama Lemelchemes HaRishus El Alpi Bezdin Shal Shivin V'Echad. So the Mishnah introduces a concept, I think we once touched on this concept, called a Melchemes Rishus. So that we divide up the mitzvah of Melchama, of going out to battle, into two different categories. One is called the Melchemes Mitzvah, that's to conquer the land of Israel. And then, if we want to expand the bounds of Israel, then we have a mitzvah called Melchemes Rishus. What does the word Rishus mean?
In this case, discretionary. But
discretionary, right. It's an optional Melchama. There's no absolute requirement to this Melchama. The Torah doesn't say that you have to go beyond the bounds of Eretz Yisrael. You want to do so for whatever reason. You the Melech, let's say, for example, will make that decision. So you need the approval of the Bez Nagodol.
So you need the Rishus of Bez Nagodol to go out to that war, or Motziin, in order to take people out, to require people to go.
I didn't follow. What was the first possibility?
You said the Lashon is Ein Motziin. It doesn't say you need a Bez Nagodol to go to that war. It says you need a Bez Nagodol to require soldiers to go out, to take people out.
So give me an afkamina, because I'm not following.
How else do you do war without
sending? Yeah, give me a case that
maybe they're voluntary
too. No. The Melchemes Rishus means that the decision to go out to battle is a Rishus, but once the decision is made and approved by Bez Nagodol, then it becomes a Chova. So the Gemara asks the following: Minani Mili. How do we know that for Melchemes Rishus, to expand the bounds of Eretz Yisrael, we need the approval of the High Court of Israel? Amar Rabbi Avo, the Amar Kra, the Pasuk says, this is a Pasuk by Yeshua ben Nun, when he went out to battle, V'lifnei Elazar HaKohen Ya'amod. Now the end of the Pasuk is V'sha'alo B'mishpat HaUrim Lifnei Hashem. In other words, they needed Elazar HaKohen, and he would ask the Urim V'Tumim. So the Gemara now darshins this pasuk. It says, "V'lifnei Elazar HaKohen Ya'amod, v'sha'alo v'mishpat ha'urim lifnei Hashem, al piv yetzu v'al piv yavo, hu v'chol bnei Yisrael ito v'chol ha'edah." So there's an extra word in the pasuk who, and then it says v'chol bnei Yisrael. So the Gemara darshins that who zeh hamelech. In other words, this whole initiative of going out to battle in a discretionary war is that of the melech. Now Yoshua actually initiated a discretionary war beyond the bounds of Eretz Yisrael, because Yeshua had the status of a melech. Then it says, "V'chol bnei Yisrael ito, ze mashuach milchama." You know, the mashuach milchama was that kohen that was like a kohen gadol. It wasn't exactly kohen gadol, but he played the role of the kohen gadol when it came to going out to battle. And you may remember that I think it's Parsha Shoftim, but anyway, in Sefer Dvarim, it says, V'nigash HaKohen V'diber al Ha'am. And he has to recite a whole Parsha. That's called Kohen Mashuach Melchama. I'm not exactly sure why Mashuach Melchama is indicated by the phrase, Kol B'nei Yisrael Ito. That I don't know. And then it says, V'chol ha'edah. I mean, that seems to be totally superfluous. Zesanhedri, and here you have to add the word Gedola. We're talking about the highest court in the land. So we see that you don't go out to Melchemes Rishus without the approval of number one, 71 elders. Number two, you need the Melech. And number three, you're going to need a Kohen Mashuach Melchama. That's very interesting. It says here in Rabbi Yavo's statement that when it says in the Pasuk, V'chala Eda, it's a reference to Sanhedrin Agdola. Now, what exactly is the role of Sanhedrin Agdola? Are they going to actually make the decision whether it makes sense to go out to battle? I mean, that's a little bit strange because we're using the Urim V'Tumim. So imagine the following scenario. The Urim V'Tumim tells us that we have to go out to battle. And then the Sanhedrin HaGadol disapproves. He says, V'dilma l'Sanhedri hu deka'amra lehu rachmana delishayle bi'Urim V'Tumim. It's not pshat that when it says, Kola Eidu Zeh Sanhedrin HaGadola, it means that they will approve and they will determine whether we go out to battle. That doesn't make any sense because you're already conferring with the Urim V'Tumim. So you're getting the word from on high that we should be going out to battle. So the Gemara suggests that no, when we derive from V'chol Eidu Zeh Sanhedrin HaGadola, the role of the Sanhedrin HaGadola is not to oversee the decision of going out to battle, but rather to oversee the process by which we ask the Urim V'Tumim. So we need to ask the Urim V'Tumim, do we have the permission to go out to this battle? And the Urim V'Tumim is going to finally decide whether we go out to battle or not. So what is the role of the Sanhedrin HaGadola, the 71 elders? That they will ask the Urim V'Tumim. In other words, you and I don't have the keys or the authority to say, well, we asked the Urim V'Tumim and we got an answer. For that, it's a very complex process, and for that you need the Bez Nagadol. Elahu mones elu harashayim lishol bi Urim V'Tumim. So when it mentions in this brisa, I'm sorry, in this statement of Rabbi Avo, it mentions the Melech and the Kohen Mashuach Melchama, and it mentions Sanhedrin. These are all, this is a list of all the bodies or the individuals that are valid, are upgraded to the status of She'ela, meaning that they can ask the question of the Urim V'Tumim and get the answer from the Urim V'Tumim. So at this point, the Gemara really doesn't have a source for the halach that seems to be indicated by a Mishnah that the approval to go out, the license to go out to this battle, has to be given by the Bez Nagadol. We don't really know that's so.
Could you explain the end of the Rashi with Dilma?
Yeah.
I think it says,
correct. We don't care about the Sanhedrin. If the Urim V'Tumim has already given its decision, and it's clear from the Urim V'Tumim that we go out to battle, no one has the right to question the decision of the Urim V'Tumim. So even though the Sanhedrin refuses to give its official approval, who cares? We don't need their approval. And that's against our Mishnah. So that this derivation of Rabbi Avo is not really that doesn't serve as an adequate source for the halacha of the requirement of our Mishnah that you need the approval of the Bez Nagadol. Where does it say in this discussion of Rabbi Avo and V'chol Eidus HaSanhedrin HaGadol that you need them in order to approve, and as if to say they have veto power to disapprove about the decision to go out to battle? Maybe we need the Sanhedrin HaGadol as one of many different possible alternative bodies that will feed the Urim V'Tumim the question. But ultimately, the decision is an exclusive decision, an absolute decision of the Urim V'Tumim. All right, Rabbi Osei, we'll stop here. If anyone's around the 10:30, we'll have for this, and tomorrow, as I mentioned, we have an early shoot.
I'm going away for Rosh Hashanah, so I'm not here Thursday and the following Wednesday.
I always knew, Don, that you were a Bretzelman.
How does that...
No, just kidding. There are 50,000 Jews who are packing out to go to Uman.
Oh, no.
For Rosh Hashanah.
Not going to Uman. I'm just going to Herzliya.
I was Chayshu Big Sharon. Yes.
Not going that far. Yeah, they're also saying he keeps rolling over in his grave because they're leaving Eretz Yisrael to go to Kutz Laretz.
I heard he's buried in Herzliya.